at the speed of light, 96 KBS. For the next few hours, the superhost, Anna May, mistress of the torch. Dave, with a unique perspective. And their core mission, to right that which is wrong, educate the ignorant, and save things funny. You can join the show on the website at geekworldradio.com. Begin.
You're listening to Geek World on 92.5 KYHY. We are your superhero superhosts, anime, mistress of the dork, and the man that never stops talking, Dave! We are joined in the studio today by our favorite correspondent, the only correspondent with his own theme song, Darkubus Rybar, which we might do the theme song later.
Yeah, we should.
Don't forget, if you want to get in touch with us, you can send an email to geekworld at 925kyhy.com or check out our website at geekworldradio.com.
He's upset.
I wanted to see what would happen.
He feels like he's just less important right now. I think that's how he feels, to be perfectly honest.
Are you ready for the Darkubus Rybar song?
It was a goof. Okay, you ready? Goof. Don't do that again.
Okay, ready?
Yes. What, are we not doing the boom boom boom?
Okay, you ready?
You've lost that Darkubus Rybar feeling, haven't you? Oh, that Darkubus Rybar feeling.
Okay, ready?
Yes. Darkubus Rybar.
Never annoying at all. Not even remotely.
Like you guys practiced at all.
I did not have enough water to do that. That was messed up right there.
Make your own recordings of the Darkubus Rybar song and send them to geekworld at 925kyhy.com.
Please do. We want to hear them. Darkubus Rybar wants to hear them.
So right now, while you guys are listening to this show, we are in San Diego at Comic-Con. Well, Darkubus Rybar may or may not be in San Diego right now.
That's creepy. It's like weird because you're not in San Diego, but you may be in San Diego. Yes. But you will be in San Diego.
Yes. Well, we're here right now while we're recording.
Time.
Wow.
Yeah, it's cool. It's like a paradox or something.
So so you guys should also be in San Diego at Comic-Con. And if you see us, be sure to wish me a happy birthday.
Yes. Anime's birthday is Wednesday. Mm-hmm. So I guess it'll be a happy belated birthday when you see her on Thursday. Unless you see her on preview night.
Yeah, that's true.
Which is Wednesday.
But still, it's the birthday weekend, you know?
That's true. That's a good point.
It's like Comic-Con makes sure that the birthday extends.
They've arranged one hell of a bash, I guess.
I know, right?
Yes, exactly. It's pretty amazing when you think about it. It's a world-known birthday party.
Yeah, Comic-Con is my birthday party.
You know, if we get a little time later in the show, we'll talk about some of the cool panels that are going to be coming up this Comic-Con. Also, we're going to try to do something this year that we haven't done before, and we're going to try to do some little, maybe tiny updates or mini episodes per day there.
Keep on checking the blog and stuff, because we're hoping to have up some little mini Geek World episodes.
Yes, they won't be full episodes at all, but they'll be just kind of like what happened on that day with us at Comic-Con. So that should be pretty fun. But enough about Comic-Con. What is a big part of this show?
Before that, though, we have a whole lot of interviews planned for Comic-Con.
We have a ton of interviews.
We're going to end up having a whole lot of content up on the website, and afterwards we're going to have like two shows devoted to it, I think.
We're going to have a lot of good stuff. You know, we don't want to. Some stuff is still in the work, so we don't want to jinx anything, but we're going to have some good stuff, so definitely it's going to be an exciting Comic-Con
and
show
for us. And if you follow our Twitter, twitter.com/geekworldradio, which you can also find on geekworldradio.com, we'll be keeping you updated on the interviews that we're doing and everything that's going on for us at Comic-Con. We're going to try and like live tweet, live blog from events.
And we'll try to get up some pictures as quickly as possible, too.
Because I have a little computer now that I can like
tiny
carry
little
with
computer.
Me.
Yes, it's very cool.
It's very exciting.
I want to see it.
I don't have it with me right now.
Yes, you don't have it.
But when you're at Comic-Con, because you better be there.
Yes.
Then,
are you going to make an appearance at Comic-Con, Darkubus Rybar? Wizard costume, perhaps?
Since there's so many people asking, I'm going to try.
Nice.
You got to try.
You got to go for it, man. Just do it. Mm-hmm. That's what Nike used to say. What do they say now?
I don't know.
Don't go to jail. I don't know.
I think they just say swoosh.
Just pay.
Yeah. I think they say, who can we get to endorse these products anymore that isn't in trouble in the law, with the law?
Yeah. But anyways, let's get on to what we're getting, what we're actually talking about this, this episode, which is, this is our Harry Potter show because the final Harry Potter just came out. So this is like magic and wizardry and stuff like that.
Yes.
And then later we might talk about the new DVD release of Tekken.
Tekken, yes. A movie I've been waiting years, literally years for.
A movie we've been waiting for since like years ago. We interviewed Luke Goss when he was on the set in Louisiana.
Yeah, back when we were in like a radio station no one could even hear.
Yeah.
Yeah. That interview might be up on like on one of our past like
Yeah, it is. It's in the
MP3s,
archive.
Right? Oh, man. That was so long ago. Yeah, this movie was supposed to come out in theaters many years ago and didn't quite work out.
The audio on that interview was so bad.
But yes, but the DVD for that is going to come out, I think, next week. And so we've already seen it. So we're going to talk about that near the end of the show. But for now, it is the Wizarding World of Harry Potter, which obviously you guys know. The last eighth movie of Harry Potter came out this last weekend and just broke a ton of records, you know, box office records. I believe it broke the opening weekend record. It just broke the four-day record. And it's just making more and more money as time goes on. And
yes,
I think
it is.
Fittingly, because it's pretty awesome. But Darkybus, you got to see it, right?
I did.
Okay, cool. So, should we talk about the new movie first, or should we just talk about the series in general?
Have you read the books?
Not all of them.
Okay.
I started off late. Read, I believe, the last two.
Okay,
in some fashion.
So you read the last ones, not the first ones. Because I read the first like one or two.
Yeah,
or
I'm
first two and a half or something.
I kind of made a decision to sort of just like kind of stick with the movies at a certain point, because there's so much stuff, it's so dense that
so you read the final book?
Not all the way through, because I didn't want to really, like, you know, I figure, you know,
you didn't want to ruin the movie?
Yeah, I'm sorry to say.
Well, you know, I think it's really cool because
I got through the sixth book because, you know, I kind of knew I had found out early on what happened, because at that time it was kind of a big turn of events, but
right.
I figured that was okay, but I kind of like, you know what, let's just wait it out. Because it was so close, too. I mean, it was also, by the time that last book came out, you kind of knew that the movies were going to all be coming, and that you weren't necessarily having to wait and clamor for it.
Well, they did a great job coming out with either every year or every other year coming out with a movie. So. You know, it's funny, I didn't read any of the books whatsoever, but I'm really happy that not really happy that I didn't read them, but I'm really happy that, you know, according to everybody,
what is reading?
Well, according to people who used to go to Borders, reading is stupid. That's not true. It's just the evolution of you know, reading, people. But you know, the
apparently
thing is,
it's now what people do on their iPad.
Yes, it is. Well, it is. You know, the thing is, luckily, that the movies are very close to the books when it comes to just major plot points in pretty much everything. So, luckily, I don't feel like I missed out too much. But, you know, it's always cool to be able to, you know more. And there are differences here and there, obviously. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, there's a difference between, you know, a 700-page book and a, you know, 2.5-hour movie, obviously.
There is.
But you know, it's funny because I know that there were a lot of people that for the first two movies were a little bored because they were very close to the books.
Yeah, I was one of them.
Yeah.
I'll never forget how bored I was watching the first movie.
It's funny because
With all these kids and parents and just everybody, like, you know, reacting and thinking to myself, what happened? Why am I not in this? Why am I bored out of my mind? And why does this, I mean, because really the first movie is literally just this is this and this is that, and it's just,
you know,
setting everything up and It's kind of a slog.
I agree with you, but having read read the first book prior to seeing the first movie, you know, I enjoyed watching it come to life. You know, I enjoyed that aspect of it. But I do agree. You know, I agree with all the people out there that criticize that it's. You know, it's just a direct.
I can't criticize it,
but they're
at this point because of all the stuff that it had to set up. Mm-hmm. But it's
plus all these, you know, kids that really didn't have much acting experience prior to the Harry Potter film. You know, it's like they did the best they could at that point.
It's funny because, you know, I don't mean to be offensive, I thought that was like the dumbest criticism people would say about it.
Yeah.
Now, granted, I didn't read the books because we also come from a generation that's had so many adaptations of books that are not even remotely close to the actual book, you know, like,
oh, yeah.
remember like when they did the Scarlet Letter back in the day with Demi Moore, and they like totally changed the end and turned into like a fairy tale ending and stuff. And so, you know, for me, I was just really really happy because I had never read the books. I was just happy with this amazingly complex, like, really cool movie that, you know, not only looked really good and the storytelling was great, but, you know, considering it was full of children who were like really weren't really actors up to that point, I thought it was, you know, really well made.
Well, they were accompanied by some pretty decent,
yeah,
you know,
some amazing
cast,
pretty cool quality, sort of, yeah. And that's what's funny about this Harry Potter series is that, you know, not only do you get to see these kids grow up into fine actors, but it's funny because especially the first few movies, it's like this weird sort of like British acting, you know, retreat where you have like a generation of older, really refined, amazing British actors, and then this new generation of really young actors who don't. It's almost like acting camp, you know, in England or something, but, you know, for the world to see.
Yeah. And make lots of money.
And makes a ton of money. Makes a ton of money. Yeah,
it's funny right now to see the kid who plays Malfoy in the previews for the
Rise of the Planet of the Apes.
Yeah, it's like, Malfoy, you're always messing things up.
I know, Malfoy.
You're always like causing trouble. What the heck?
Even the apes aren't like. Safe.
Yes. I mean, unfortunately, Caesar did not have that hero inside him to keep him from turning violent like Harry did.
Damn.
It's very sad.
Well, you know, he didn't turn violent. He just released, you know, he released
the Kraken.
You know,
yeah.
I mean,
I
like he, it was like, you know, when Harry had, like, you know, Dumbledore's army and, like, you know, he gathered them all and taught them spells.
I'm slowly starting to be kind of more excited about that Rise of the Planet of the Apes movies, even though I know it's not going to be good. It's funny, though, because every time, like, I hear James Franco talk, like, you know, I know he's playing a scientist who's coming up with a cure for Alzheimer's, but he just sounds like a stoner every time he talks, so it's just really funny hearing him say those lines.
Yeah.
You know, he's a good actor, you know, don't get me wrong, but it's just really funny. But yeah, I mean, I kind of want to see that movie, honestly, at this point.
Yeah.
But I like it because it's like
apes.
It's like, it's funny because
it has apes.
Well, it's
what
like,
else?
Because
Andy Serkis.
It seems like it's kind of like, it's like, you know, half and half. It's got that fun kind of like, we're raising the ape from Congo or buddy like elements to it, where like a man and his ape, and then it turns into like a big, you know, action frenzy at the very end.
A man and his ape.
A man and his ape.
Monkeys, apes.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's going to be
It has
primates.
So,
that's all you need.
So,
but no spy mates.
No spy mates.
I remember when I saw the first Harry Potter movie, it was actually over Christmas, the year after it came out, and I wasn't excited at all about this. This is one of those things where I was like,
year after?
My mom, yeah. Yeah,
so you actually so this was a year after the movie came out.
Yeah, I was late to seeing the first one.
You were late
because, you know, it was one. I naturally have this inclination to dislike anything that's insanely popular that I don't know about, which I know is a really bad thing. But you know, sometimes
you don't know about it, so you just hate it.
Well, sometimes it works out, like for Twilight, like when it's garbage. But for Harry Potter, it's like after a while, I started being like, you know, maybe there's something.
You
to
know,
it.
For Twilight, we watched those movies and we realized that we had every right.
Oh God, I know.
We haven't continued on, though.
I know. Well,
we need to continue on.
The Eclipse one was on HBO the other day, and we flipped by it, and they're like in the Old West or something, and I was like, what the hell is this movie?
Yeah.
But, you know, and freaking they got, like, David Slade. That's when they started getting, like, actually good directors doing it. It's scary. But, yeah, we might want to finish up that show at some point. Maybe we'll wait for all of them to finish, though, because I don't know if I can handle it.
The difference is, though, I've never seen a Twilight film with the actual, you know, with the twi heads or whatever they're called.
Yeah.
Twi
hearts?
Well, yeah, next time we do a twi show, we're going to have to get someone that is a twi fan.
That was one of the things I think that annoyed me about the first Harry Potter.
Yeah.
And maybe it was just my own reaction to being like the only person in this room full of 1,000 people who has no idea what the hell's going on and who these people are. I mean,
do you feel
also,
like a scared muggle amongst wizards?
Yes, I felt like a scared muggle, and I'm tired of it. I was literally like 20 minutes into the movie, tired of the way that people were talking with muggles and Hogwarts, and you know what? Just quiet down, damn it. But I warmed up to it by the second one.
See, you should have just gone in like, you know, with your wand. You would have felt at
that's
home.
True.
Didn't realize.
You know, I was at a bookstore the other day. I think it was Barnes & Noble, because I think it's the only one left. And honestly, like, they had the wands. I wanted to get a wand. They had, like, you
that's
know,
one
they
way
had Voldemort's wand.
Open.
Exactly. We're selling magical wands.
Yeah.
If you guys are also love the Harry Potter series, or you also would like to buy a wand, you should send us an email to geekworld@925kyhy.com and check out our website at geekworldradio.com.
You have Geek World wands?
That would be awesome. I wish. Yeah.
Okay, we're going to make some Geek World wands.
We should. That'd be awesome.
We'll whittle them.
Yes.
They will be hand whittled by Geek World.
From the horn of a unicorn. Yes, it should be pretty awesome.
Nice.
We've got to send Geekin out to find that unicorn.
Yes.
got to send him on another quest.
But I started off late, you know, in the Harry Potter series, and I remember really liking the first movie a lot, against kind of what I had hoped. You know, it was like one of those situations.
You hoped not to like
it. Yeah, yeah. Well, it was like one of those things like, well, because then you know there's an investment required after that. It's sort of like Smallville. You know, I wasn't expecting, okay, how about this? Most of my favorite things I start off already disliking it before I start. Buffy the Vampire Slayer, I hated before I saw the show.
Because you had never seen it.
Yeah, and then I saw it and loved it. Smallville, I hated before I saw the show. And then I saw it and I loved it.
What's this new
Harry
stuff?
Harry Potter. Yeah.
I've never seen it before. I don't like it.
There's a stuff
I've never seen it before.
At least, you know, you're the same way with food. You
I
hate
am.
Food.
Yeah,
like, you won't
new
try
stuff.
It. It's gone. Well, yeah, that's pretty much how it goes.
I would always come up with some creative reason to dislike it. You know, Buffy, it was because, like, why isn't Christina, Christy Swanson Buffy? Because that's who I remember from the
Where's
movie.
Where's Luke Perry?
Smallville, it was because Smallville had all those ads of, like, him, like, with his shirt off, like, on the Scarecrow thing. I was like, oh, God, what is this? You know? It's like Smallville via, like, it's like Superman via Calvin Klein. I wasn't interested. And, you know, there's always reasons to dislike things.
Yeah, but what,
you mean you
I was a very,
what was your reason for Harry
Potter? I was a very negative kid.
Because he hadn't seen it.
No.
He hadn't read it. Therefore, he hated it.
It was because
reasons.
Anything so immensely popular, I decided, probably wasn't that good. That's what I decided at that point, because I was younger, you know, and I kind of disliked everything.
You know what, Dave? McDonald's is immensely popular, and their French fries are like crap.
I was, it's true. I was a hater, you know, back then. I was a much angrier kid, and
was
so I think
awesome?
That's why.
Yeah.
But, you know, I saw it, and I loved it. You know, I thought it was great. It was really touching, and then, you know, from there on, you know, I've just loved every single one of the movies.
Yeah, I mean, part of it is, I think, from my perspective at the time in which this thing started,
mm-hmm.
None of us thought that this would actually go all the way.
Yeah, totally.
That they would get better as they go along, that they would literally shift in tone to a point where if you were to watch, and this would be interesting, to watch the first movie and then the final movie.
Yeah.
And just see this really dramatic shift into something that you kind of probably a lot of kids couldn't watch when they first started out.
It's true.
I totally agree. I mean, the thing is, it has truly evolved.
I mean, I thought we were entering into the next Police Academy.
Yeah, right.
Harry Potter 5, there would be different actors, they'd be cheap, they would kind of just throw these things out there. But that's not what happened.
But, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, you bring up a good point where really this is probably in many ways the most admirable franchise of film history, at least for right now, because, you know, they not only do they stick so close to source material for all the movies, but, you know, really the worst of the Harry Potters is still better than any of the worst for any other franchise. And it's just, and it's a real testament to not only, you know, the great storytelling and great actors, but just, you know, just the way the whole thing was handled.
In terms of
amazing.
In terms of consistency and length, yeah. I mean, probably, I would still say the James Bond movies were more because they last longer, but they're also kind of they're re-energized everything.
Yeah, exactly.
This is the one core group that has, for the most part, stayed together. And
I mean, it's usually only like death that causes somebody to not continue their role. Yeah, exactly. Or arrest, exactly.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's true. You know, I mean, you look at something like James Bond, where they always have a new director, and every few movies they have a new Bond, and you know, and sometimes it's from Ian Fleming book, and other times it's just something they made up. But you know, Harry Potter is really like it's being able to stick with that series, and really the only thing that differed from was they split up the last, you know, book into two movies, which, you know, for me, you know, I know there's a lot of haters out there. It's like, oh, it was just, you know, a way to get more money, which, you know, of course it will make more money, and it did. But for me, it's like, at this point, the series, it proved that, like, you know, it deserved that.
It didn't feel like it was stretching.
No, not at all.
Yeah, I mean, I just love how much respect they all had for J.K. Rowling and her work that, you know, I mean, she was so influential in how they interpreted the books.
I think that's why.
So often the authors or, you know, writers are like kept out of it. And I mean, there's a reason that Alan Moore has disowned every single movie they've ever made of any of his graphic novels.
I agree. I mean, it's a great point. And, you know, also, you know, you look back and really I think the reason that, you know, people are our age like it too is, you know, I think it's a real kind of hearkening back to kind of some of the stuff we got when we were younger. Like, you know, think of things like fantasy stuff like Labyrinth, stuff that, you know, did have its dark stuff in it. You know, Wizard of Oz, it had its dark stuff in it. It wasn't just like, you know, really glossed over to, you know, because we're afraid of kids' sensibilities. And, you know, I know J.K. Rowling got into a lot of trouble because of the violence in the books and stuff like that. And also, you know, super religious people and their occultism, you know, scares.
Oh my
but
God.
Honestly, like, you know, the thing is, it, you know, even from the first movie on with these little kids, you know, it really puts them in these scary situations and it deals with serious situations. And frankly, it deals with these situations. And I think that, you know, it's a true piece of art. You know, I mean, it's funny when you look at something about like a boy wizard, something made for young kids, and you kind of, you know, it's easy to just go, oh, it's, you know, just this silly fantasy thing. But I think that these are truly, you know, some of them are really great movies, and, and it's a really truly fantastic franchise, and I just love it, you know. And for somebody who didn't read the books and didn't really get too caught up in them, it's like every year I was really excited for the next one, like without a doubt.
Yeah, yeah, you were in your Hogwarts costume.
Yes.
Oh my God.
No, I never got the Hogwarts costume. And that's what's so cool about it too, is, you know, you can look at things and, you know, sort of roll your eyes at that you would never do that, but it doesn't take away from how awesome the story is and how awesome the characters are. And, you know, it's one of those really great things. And I think Harry Potter is one of those few really cross-platform everything, you know, cross-generational, cross-race, cross-age, cross-sex. Like, there's so many people from different walks of life who just love these stories because, you know, it's all about the outsider. It's all about, you know, being brave when everything's against you. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's
a magical story.
It is, you know. And also, I think that there's a lot of times, you know, we get like things like Star Wars where, you know, you get the, you know, first two movies are great. The third movie, it depends on how you, I think when you're young, when you see the third movie, you really love it, like Jedi. I think, you know, but there's a lot of things that aren't great about it compared to the first two. And then you get a lot of really bad prequels. It's sort of like, why did they make these movies? And, you know, this is just one of those, like, you know, pieces that it's just one big story. I mean, the closest thing I can really relate to it is like certain anime series that we watch that kind of go on for like a decade and, you know, have like each, like, you know, really interesting plot point. Everything kind of stays with one big story. But, you know, you don't really see this much when it comes to movie franchises.
When the last Harry Potter movie came out, we did our little comparison of Harry Potter to Naruto. And, you know, we're actually going to try and get that up online, but it might not be for another couple weeks.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing because, you know, Naruto is definitely one of our favorite animes of all time. And Naruto definitely borrows heavily from Harry Potter, but not, I don't think in a way of really ripping it off at all. But certainly
all this
takes
stuff,
good aspects.
Harry Potter's, I mean, especially, they all rip off the paradigms that already exist.
It's on the shoulders of giants. You know, that works both for science and for art.
You know, it's like asking, is Shakespeare a fraud?
Yeah! we had a big discussion about that, of how it's Anonymous, I believe the movie's called. Just those posters piss me off so much. Like, I hate it. Like, I don't like the proliferation of that
That's
idea.
Because you haven't seen it.
Have you seen it?
No, but you haven't seen it, therefore you...
Oh, exactly, yeah, I forgot.
He actually has a reason for it.
I just don't
Shakespeare?
Yes.
I just don't like the proliferation of that idea.
Yeah,
and whether
machine.
Or not that's a theory or not, it bothers me because people, especially, I think nowadays with, you know, you see a headline and that's all you get, that's all the information you get. So now people are running around being like, oh yeah, now Shakespeare was a fraud because some movie poster said it.
So... What?
I
you really think people are going to run around thinking that Billy Shakespeare didn't do the work and they're going to like disown him and not buy his stuff?
The fact that those conspiracy theories already exist—that's
the thing.
Historical fiction, you know, it's not the same as JFK, made by
a really stupid Oliver Stone.
But nobody knows that. The thing is, honestly, I think we've kind of entered an age of believing in the conspiracy theory, like that's the reality of things.
They're stupid.
It's not the same as, like, you know, Jesus Christ vampire hunter or Abraham Lincoln vampire.
Yeah,
vampire,
which is clearly,
killer,
you know,
know?
That
he really was a vampire.
But, you know, honestly, I just, you know, and also to go along with this is just something we said last show about, you know, I felt that really, does it actually, you know, matter in the end? Like, if this one guy, William Shakespeare, didn't write all this stuff, is it going to matter to people in high school who read
these
things?
No, the book is good, read it.
And also, on top of that, it didn't make any sense to me. One of the other points I made last show was the fact that, you know, this guy, back then, you know, it was not the age of the Stephanie Meyer where you wrote something and you became a multi-billionaire and you were so famous and everyone loved you forever. and worshipped at your altar. Back then, an artisan was kind of a lower like place to be.
Yeah.
And so like it's not, it wouldn't really be like one of those things. So like I'm going to steal this guy's work and people are, I'm going to be world famous. It didn't work that way back then. And so it's just very bizarre.
Well,
nor would it really be punishment to have, you know, your name taken off of something you did like in the same kind of way.
It's a kind of myopic viewpoint of what fame, of what artistry and fame was now, like, you know, placed on back then.
That's actually kind of interesting, don't you think?
The idea
of telling that kind of story using today's sensibilities?
I do think that's interesting, but, you know,
not using real figures.
It's the posters that I don't like. It's that proliferation of that idea
of
Shakespeare being a fraud.
To the ad people.
Oh, that's the thing. I mean, the idea of the movie doesn't upset me because it's interesting, and, you know, that's kind of where, you know, Hollywood is consistently rewriting history. That's a thing that's been going on late in the last few years. It's the posters that bother me the most. That's the thing that bothers me.
Yeah, I don't think I don't think they're saying that Shakespeare's a fraud. They're just making a movie that suggests the idea and possibly will show why.
You know who's not a fraud?
Who?
Harry Potter.
Harry Potter's not a fraud.
He's awesome.
He is real.
Yes.
He's a real boy.
Darn it. He's the boy who lived.
With glasses.
So
did you, some of the 3D screenings, or like I don't know if it's how many of them, but some of them you got little 3D Harry Potter style glasses.
Did you see in 3D?
Yeah,
really.
Like I saw half the movie.
You know, that's funny because we warned people ahead of time that this was a conversion. This, you know, though they did say, I'm actually really glad that, because you can talk about this in a second. They did say the fact that, you know, they had like a year to do it. So this is probably the longest period of time that they took on a conversion compared to something like Clash of Titans that was a few months old. But how do you feel about the conversion? If only people could see it.
It sucks.
Yeah, it does, right?
3D sucks.
It's not true, though.
All of it.
That's like saying that, you know.
All of it.
It's like saying, you know, some guy kills his family with a gun. Guns suck, but we need guns to fight wars for us.
We
it's
don't need 3D
use,
glasses
it's how
for
you
anything.
Use 3D. It's how
guns
you use 3D.
Guns don't fight wars.
Shut up.
We don't
you,
need 3D
Everyone else understands.
Glasses.
You know, there's a whole...
We don't need
All
them.
The red states just love me, by the way. There's a big difference in how you use 3D.
I can use some guns and shoot the people who invented 3D.
You know, right now, only James Cameron should use 3D. I think,
and
I think
even
that's
him,
how
I
go.
May have to have a talking to.
But actually, I think we are going to move on to our first break, and we come back. We'll actually be talking more about Harry Potter.
No, just about 3D.
So we'll be back.
Die 3D.
Don't forget, if you want to get in touch with us, send an email to geekworld@925kyhy.com and check out our website at geekworldradio.com.
In a world of chaos and confusion, there are but two geeks who can clear everything up. Anna and Dave. Geek World, Thursdays at noon on 925 KYHY Burbank.
We're back. You're listening to Geek World on 92.5 KYHY. We are your superhero superhost, anime, mistress of the dork, and the man that never stops talking, Dave. Don't forget, if you want to get in touch with us, you can send an email to geekworld@925kyhy.com and check out our website at geekworldradio.com.
Yeah.
Hey, Muffin Man, let the Rybar in.
Okay.
We are joined in the studio today by Darkubus Rybar for our very special magical Wizarding World of Harry Potter show. Although not actually Wizarding World, because if we haven't been to the Wizarding World
it's
of Harry
Orlando.
Potter.
It's not Orlando.
Yeah.
I want to go now.
I know,
I
right?
I want to be part of the Wizarding World of Harry Potter.
Oh, my God. There are people that actually play Quidditch.
Yes.
They stick brooms between their legs and, like, run around the field. And there's one person that runs
Quidditch?
Around as the Golden Snitch. Have
are you,
you
the Golden Snitch?
How do they fly?
They don't fly.
No, they run. It's kind
of
sad. But one
of
person,
they don't. Of course
one,
they
person
don't fly.
One person runs around as the Golden Snitch.
And so everyone tackles that person. It's awesome.
I think that's called football.
Or rugby.
Very well, maybe. Yes.
With brooms.
Yeah.
So, you know, I kind of want to go into, does anybody have kind of favorites of these movie series? Because, you know, honestly, I know there's a few that I like the most. You know, I like them all. There's the one I like the least, which I think is a lot of people, which was probably The Half-Blood Prince, just because it's sort of like, we kind of explained, it's sort of like a bridge to the end, and it's kind of like less its own movie and kind of more just kind of a segue. But, you know, Obviously, I think a lot of people feel like the third one is the
best. It's the best directed.
Certainly best directed.
Yeah.
And it really, there was.
I would go on that.
The third one also, the kids kind of made the biggest leap in their acting. I think working with Alphonse Cuarón really helped them to improve their skills. I mean, even they like said that he really taught them, you know, a lot of just new ways to think of acting.
Yeah.
I don't want to speak ill of anything or anyone.
But are you going to talk about Chris Columbus?
I was watching a little bit of Percy Jackson.
Yes, we saw that.
It's sort of amazing that this is the same man.
Yeah.
It's sort of amazing that this is actually the same guy that wrote some of the best movies in the 80s. But I'm not surprised that it's actually, in a sense, that it's the same director, because Chris Columbus, as a director, is kind of poor.
Well, the thing is
that...
He
doesn't make very exciting movies.
Chris Columbus was kind of the perfect thing for those kids
for that time.
Like,
because, he makes harmless movies.
But and the fact was that it seems like he would be an easy director for kids to work with, for little kids that don't know what they're doing to, you know, he knew how to handle them in a way that would, you know, teach them the very basics, but not really challenge them.
Because he couldn't. I mean, because he's done a lot of interviews saying, like, really, they only have about 20 minutes at a time where they can focus on anything before they start laughing. And because they were so young at the time when they were shooting. I think Daniel Radcliffe was like 11.
I mean, and he was found in, like, essentially a random search for kids.
Yeah, I mean, and so, you know, basically it was just one of those things where, like, you know, I mean, that's the main reason he says why the movie's so cutty is because the fact is they couldn't keep the camera on the kids for too long because they're so young, and it's difficult to work with kids that young. So yeah, I think Columbus was definitely the safe guy to go to because, you know, he had done, like, what, Mrs. Doubtfire and a few other things like that they knew.
Well, he knows how to make a successful kids movie. But he sure knows how to write some pretty good movies. But I mean, I think wasn't her choice originally, like, Terry Gilliam or something?
Yes,
along those
lines. It was Terry Gilliam, but the studio, they're terrified of Terry Gilliam, as they should be.
Yeah,
I mean, honestly.
I love Terry Gilliam, but my God, would that movie have been...
Ever since, like, Brazil, where it ended up going, like, super over budget, and, like, people, you know, though critically acclaimed, is not for everybody. You know, I mean, I love Brazil, but it's not, like, I wouldn't be, like, recommend that to, you know, a family of four.
Well, it's interesting choices. I mean, I think that definitely the third one, Alfonso Cuarón, I mean, he obviously brought a lot to that series that I think that no one had actually expected him to bring so quickly. Because, I mean, I kind of went on the good graces, especially with the second one, which was definitely, it was darker.
Yeah.
I remember that, and it got to the point faster and it moved quicker, and even though I think it was the longest one.
It was really long, yeah.
I mean, but it was a better movie, and I went into it kind of still with the same little chip on my shoulder I had the first time around, but I remember liking the second one just infinitely.
It's much
a lot
better.
More. And then when that third one came around, it just completely, it made me feel like, okay, this is what it should be.
Yeah. I mean, I totally agree. It's funny because nowadays, really the main thing that people credit Chris Columbus with is casting the three main actors.
Which I'll have to give him on that.
Yeah. And you know, they couldn't have, like, that was such a gamble to pick any three kids, because you never know who's going to be, like, you know, the Kurt Russell, you know, and grow up like great, or who's going to end up, you know, every other child actor.
Who's
going to
grow up really, really weird looking.
Yes, exactly. And they had no idea, you know, and really it's such a gamble.
I also like that J.K. Rowling, when she saw Daniel Radcliffe, she was like, that's exactly how I imagined Harry Potter to look in real life.
Yeah, Entertainment Weekly did a really great whole, like, 50-page thing on Harry Potter where they had interviews with people and stuff, and they were talking about the fact that, you know, they searched for a lot of kids, obviously, for Harry Potter, and Daniel Radcliffe, they had asked him to be Harry Potter, but his parents didn't want him to do it because it was a 6-movie deal, and they were also planning on shooting in America for quite a while, and, you know, they're all English, and so, you know, they weren't interested, and they basically had to, like, scout him a few times to finally get him to agree, especially after J.K. Rowling saw footage of him and said that's how she always envisioned Harry would look. And you know, it's just kind of it's spectacular how they've become such great actors. But I really think a big part was, you know, Warner Brothers making some great decisions. You know, I know that we bag on Warner Brothers once in a while because, you know, no studio can make great decisions all the time. But I think they really hit a home run with this series. And I think a big thing is, you know, taking the chance on someone like Alphonse Cuarón because, you know, the guy, you know, he's an artist. But, you know, he had not done blockbusters up until this point. I mean, he was a guy who was famous for E2 Mama Tambien, yeah. which is like a really clever, really arty, you know, sex movie, essentially.
Yeah.
And, you know, couldn't be anything more
kind of one of those big budget kitty movies a long time ago.
Yeah, it was like Little Princess.
Something like that,
or,
and I remember it kind of being very
what's
successful
the one with the, in the garden? I think you read the books.
Might have been
when
one
you were
of
kid,
those.
Right? The one, it's.
There's The Secret Garden.
The Secret Garden, maybe. Was that the one?
Something
they
along those lines.
Yeah.
I think it was like one of those where it was like sort of a little bit above the.
No, it was a Little Princess.
Okay. Little Princess, that's it, yeah.
Which is one
and,
of the other ones I used
and
to
yeah,
like
he,
when I was
he
a
had
kid.
Done that, but, you know, we're talking pre, you know, Children of Men, which is a lot of what people look at as like, you know, his big accomplishment other than Harry Potter 3. And so, you know, they took a chance on this guy because they knew he was an artist. And not only, you know, it's funny because it's one of those great kind of like hero journey things that Warner Brothers did where not only did they get a guy, they took a chance and he succeeded. In a way that a lot of people think it's the best movie, but also he challenged those kids and he made them better actors. And from there on, they just got better and better, especially working mm-hmm. with much better actors, you know, as time went on. And yeah, it's just, it was a great decision. And I remember the first shot of Harry Potter 3 really scared me because, you know, we're used to Chris Columbus, yeah. which everything is very like steady. Everything's, you know, on a tripod, everything is like a dolly shot. And, we get like Alphonse Cuarón handheld, you know, Harry Potter.
Yeah,
and I was like, oh my God, what is happening here? And that was really just that first scene, which, you know, they wanted to kind of make it tense, you know, with Harry Potter in the Dursley's house.
It's tough because in these types of, in this whole idea of having something that's a serial that's essentially a lot of different movies, you kind of need a consistency.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's the one thing about, like, the James Bond movies and stuff like that, why you can't ever have, like everyone says, well, why doesn't Steven Spielberg or Quentin Tarantino or someone direct a James Bond movie? Because they can't, because they have too much authorship.
Yeah.
And their movie would be different than the kind of movie you're kind of used to.
Yeah.
And so with these, it's really tough to kind of put your own stamp on these movies and not necessarily take over or feel that you're too far, you know, gone from the stray. I mean, this is something that really
that's
sort
a good
of,
point.
He was able to maintain. It still felt like it was connected to the previous movies.
Yes.
And it just felt like they made the adjustments that were necessary to kind of get this thing going to the
yeah.
next level.
I think it's a great point, yeah. And honestly, you know, it's like, for instance, a great, you know, example that's like someone like Peter Jackson, which they trusted him to do all three of the Lord of the Rings
yeah.
movies.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and the thing is, the guy had, you know, the tenacity to be able to do it. The guy worked 20-hour days for, you know, 2 years in order, you know, he was, like, shooting during the day and editing at night with the editor. I mean,
you know,
the guy, I mean, that's why he went from, like, you know, normal-sized guy to, like, big fat guy. Because
he went from big fat guy to thin guy.
Well, he did after Lord of the Rings. Uh-huh. After Lord of the Rings,
but during Lord of the Rings,
I always remember him being a big fat guy.
Yeah, yeah. After Lord of the Rings, he lost a bunch of weight, you know, when he went to go make King
Kong. I guess
Kong,
that was too much for Guillermo.
But, you know, yeah. Well, you know, Guillermo is it doesn't matter. He's awesome.
You know, it's funny. We've actually been talking a lot on many of the past shows about adaptations of different medium, largely, you know, over the last few months because of the Uncharted, the video game that's being adapted into a movie.
Yes.
And, you know, I actually have to say just like I'm happy about, you know, the Harry Potter films and like you said, the Lord of the Rings films, I'm really happy with the director that they now have who's handling Uncharted.
Neil Burger, yeah.
Because yet again, you have somebody that appreciates the work that that what they're doing is based on. And they appreciate that it has such a magnificent story to follow and that they're actually trying to truly adapt it, you know, the way that it should be rather than being like, I'm going to take the name and try and monopolize off the fame of the name of this and just make my own thing because I'm better than, you know, I know better than this, you know, in the case of Uncharted, this incredibly popular game.
Well, actually, I have some, like, a little news, like a little quote about that if you want to talk
yeah, Let's just take a little.
Actually, this just came out this week. Neil Berger has been talking about, who, of course, directed Limitless. He's now working on Uncharted.
Which,
and,
if you haven't seen Limitless, it's totally worthwhile.
It's really good.
We really enjoyed it.
It's really good.
It's actually a really worthwhile film. We kept making fun of it so much before we had seen
the brain
it. Because the brain pill. It's like, and the whole, like, you know, you only use 20% of your brain, which is totally untrue. But it was, you know, that's literally just a device. It's not even the truth of the pill.
Yeah, it wasn't even what it did. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's definitely a worthwhile movie.
But if you listen to our show last week, you know that we're actually really happy with Neil Berger doing this, because you know, the way he adapted Limitless was, you know, pretty great, and he's got a really great visual style. And we also listened to his commentary.
He seems
like a very intelligent guy. But basically, you know, they let everyone know that David O. Russell's plans for Uncharted have been totally scrapped. And Neil Berger is quoted saying, "We're beginning from scratch, and we're going back to the video game. It's really one of the most cinematic video games, and one that has really developed characters. So, you know, there's a lot of cool, really intense things that, if they work for the film story, I want to use them." It's like everyone who loves video games and who has seen every bad video game adaptation just, like, gave a huge sigh of relief.
Yeah. Geekgasm.
It's like, what? It's like, you mean there's, like, a big Hollywood director who actually wants to stick with the story and the characters from a video game? How did this happen?
Mm-hmm.
And what kind of world do we live in? Go ahead.
They, a lot of that's also going to be up to how much money and you know, all those considerations.
Well, yeah, but the thing is that what we've discussed in the past is that with Sony, you know, Uncharted is such a humongous series for them, and Nate Drake, the character, is one of those, like, flagship characters for them, and it's an exclusive character to them, and so they want to make sure to be able to really hold on to the integrity of that character to ensure the continuation of the game franchise.
That's why I think this could end up being one of the best franchises of all video game adaptations, because Sony, they really hold a lot of stock in that character. You know, if you watched their E3 big showcase this year, I mean, Uncharted, like, 3 was, like, a big part of it, because it is one of their biggest selling games, and so that character can make a lot of money for them. And on top of that, they could make at least a trilogy of these movies if they do a good job, because he is, like, the new Indiana Jones. He's, like, this cool, cocky, like, you know, awesome version of Indiana Jones. And honestly, on top of that, they can make 3 and beyond. I mean, this could be a huge franchise if done correctly. So if you guys are also excited about Uncharted, especially now that Neil Berger's taken over, send us an email to geekworld@925kyhy.com and check out our website at geekworldradio.com. Oh, yeah, you know, I actually saw a few more quotes from Neil Berger. You want me to say them real quick?
Oh, yeah, go for it.
He also said that... you know, he also said that this is a very different kind of treasure hunt movie. It's very real and has a kind of insane, wild feeling that comes out of the character. Nate being this con man and a bit of a hustler, living by his wits, ballsy and capable of anything. And also, of course, everyone wants Nathan Fillion to play Drake, which, as much as we love Nathan Fillion, is never going to happen in a million years.
Yeah, I mean, that's 10 years ago.
It's a silly idea, honestly. And
I love Nathan Fillion, but he's not.
It doesn't make any
sense.
He's
not right for it anymore.
Basically. You know, when they asked him about Nathan Fillion, Neil Berger said, "I think he's a good actor, but I think there's a lot of really good actors who don't even look like Nate Drake who could play it. Where we are right now is we're literally starting from scratch on the screenplay, and I think that once we finish it, then we'll go to actors and see who's available and who's right for the parts, and, you know, whenever that happens."
Another way of saying not a chance in hell.
Yeah, I mean, in honestly,
like, sorry, Nathan Fillion fans, but
yeah,
you know.
I mean, just because somebody's popular in geek culture doesn't mean they're right for every role. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean,
just because he's great at being that kind of, you know, cocky kind of character, it doesn't make him right for the 27-year-old Nate Drake.
Exactly. It just doesn't make any sense. In the same way that Mark Wahlberg was completely inappropriate for Nate Drake, who they had been pushing for a while. So, you know, there's a lot
of great actors. David O. Russell.
David O. Russell, and Mark Wahlberg.
Yeah.
And yes. So I'm very excited about that. Anyway, let's get back to Harry Potter.
Yes.
Let's do that.
So should we actually talk about this final film, or do you want to talk about the kind of culture surrounding Harry Potter? Like, Netflix has this funny documentary that we're going to talk about at some point, whether it be now or a little later. What is it? Harry Potter Rocks?
We can talk about it.
And it's about the bands.
It's like bands for Harry Potter, yeah.
Like bands that base all of their music on the Harry Potter phenomenon, like you know, Harry and the Potters. And the counterpoint to that, Draco and the Malfoys.
It was, you know, it's one of those things where it's kind of a cheapo documentary, but it's kind of fun. And
especially when you get to hear the song, My Dad's Rich and Your Dad's Dead.
I mean, I don't want to spend too much time talking about it because it's not like something that we would really endorse you watching.
But it's just entertaining and it's really interesting, you know, what kind of a culture that Harry Potter has really brought, you know, how it's more than just, you know, books and movies and, you know, how people really relate to the stories and get into it. And then you got the counterpoint to that where you got all these, like, people, like, these, you know, religious fanatics who are like, Harry Potter teaches kids to be obsessed with witchcraft and want to cast spells and
that's
stuff.
The biggest kind of weird thing about that surrounded Harry Potter thing.
Try.
Which I think, honestly, I think it subsided after a few years, but when it first came out, there was a lot of that. I knew people who had friends who they refused to let their kids read Harry Potter because they thought it was, like, anti-Christian.
Yeah.
They really thought that, you know, there was all these, like, really, like, evil, like, you know, implications
messages
to it.
And, yeah.
Which, you know, to me is just really funny because, to me, it's just the same as any other superhero story. I mean, you know, this is a world where, you know, there are people who have magic and people who don't.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is that in Harry Potter, you're born into magic. You know, like, you are either born a wizard or you're not born a wizard. Yeah. And if you're born a wizard, then you're a wizard. And if you're not, you can't just, like, you know, make spells and make, you know, make magic out of nothing.
You know, the problem is this is like the parents are right now are the generation of people who saw things like, you know, ghoulies and stuff like that, where, you know, people just thought they could become a sorcerer and, you know, create all kinds of bad things, you know, but it's like, it's not like that. You know what I'm talking about.
No, ghoulies. I don't.
Ghoulies.
What are you talking? I know
ghoulies
what you're talking about.
Awesome.
I know ghoulies, but what are you talking about?
That idea, back then, that proliferation of the idea that, you know, it's like anyone can study witchcraft and actually become, like, have powers. That's the idea that was proliferated back in the 80s in all those movies.
That was when there was all these satanic cults and stuff that were...
It wasn't people born to be a wizard. It was people that, you know, worship Satan and got secret powers from doing
that. I want to talk to stupid people. I want... If you know a stupid
Dear stupid
person,
people, yes. This is a message from
if
Ivar.
If you really think that Shakespeare didn't write his own plays or that you can sit there and become a wizard or any of those things, and that Harry Potter
that Hogwarts exists.
Yeah, I want to talk to you. I want to talk to you. Come on, I want to have a nice sit down.
I think they're listening.
No. I'm
saying, you actually want them?
I want to look at them. Okay. I want to talk to you and have a nice sit down.
If you are one of these people,
we'll have a dinner.
Send an email to Geekworld
sandwich.
Send an email to Geekworld at 925kyhy.com and we will forward it to Rybar.
And he will talk to you.
And you guys can, like, plan to have
I'm a complete and utter moron who really thinks this stuff.
Well, it's amazing, you know, and well, I believe even the guy who's Pope now, before he became Pope, said that it was Harry Potter was kind of a danger to Christianity, to kids' views on Christianity.
Yeah, I think that people saying that kind of stuff is where the real danger comes in, because it's like, you know, it just... People see it as for what it is. Ridiculous.
It's funny because you get this character who's...
Hey, that was a spell. Ridiculous!
You get this character who's such a strong moral character, is such a heroic character, such a good example of kids and how they should live their lives and the kind of bravery they should have and helping other people out and, you know, fighting against the odds. But, you know, instead of thinking about that, you focus on, like, you know, witchcraft is bad. And it's just so silly.
Yeah, well, and, like, you know, half of them never read the books, never saw the movies, and they just, you know, base it on, you know, their own... ridiculous fears.
It's
their
because
own
it's successful.
Yeah, and that's another part issues. too. Is anything that's successful, you know, people get scared about.
You just hate on
stuff. I'll hate on stuff, but, you know, other people get scared of it.
I mean, you didn't hear them protesting the Golden Compass, did you?
Yeah, well, they did later. Remember, they did later. There was a whole idea because there's like a supposedly like a themes of atheism or something.
No, it is.
Compass.
Well, yeah, there actually
tanked.
Are. But.
Well, that's the thing. People were upset about it, but at the same time, no one was excited about it because, you know, I'm actually glad you brought up the Golden Compass because there were a lot of, you know, imitators, people trying to, you know, kind of get that zeitgeist of Harry Potter, which, you know, all failed miserably purely because, the, you know, the source material was not...
One Narnia kind of hung in there for like
Narnia
a
is
half.
Like the Friday Night Lights of, you know, of movie series. Well, like it hung in there, but it never really made
a profit.
It did
hang in there. It made one movie that made a lot of money, and then they kind of just sort of
somehow made the last two, though. They somehow got those done.
But Narnia is also a franchise. Like the books have been around for like decades.
But that's,
you know,
like Lord of the Rings, I thought Harry Potter would become.
Yeah, well, but the thing, but yeah,
like,
I mean, the thing is that Harry Potter,
doing this and...
Harry Potter was able to monopolize right at the perfect time, whereas, you know, Narnia, it was still at the point where there were enough people like that knew it from their own childhoods, but at the same time, not enough kids that were into it now. So it like you said,
they
the first the one made
yeah, the first one made a lot of money, and if
but,
they were good movies, mm-hmm. the second one certainly was a better.
It would have reinvigorized the books too.
But I mean, they just kind of dropped the ball and didn't really.
It's really funny because before the sixth movie of Harry Potter came out, a lot of people were sort of speculating that, you know, maybe the movies wouldn't do as well now because, you know, Deathly Hallows had come out already as the book, and they were afraid maybe, you know, like...
People would forget about it.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly, like onto the next thing, you know, and it's obviously, if you look at
the
numbers...
That's the end. People want
to
see
that's
end.
The thing, yeah. It's like, people really, like, you want to see the full culmination of it, even if you skipped out on the middle movies.
Yeah.
But I don't think there's enough emphasis put onto the fact of how well these movies are made.
They're, yeah,
I mean,
they're,
the thing is, we were watching some of that Sorcerer's Apprentice movie, you know,
and
it's a goofy movie, but, you know, even just taking away that, it's like the directing's bad, the acting, everything about it's bad, and you look at Harry Potter, and every one is like, it's just a well-made film.
And part of the thing is the difference between, like we said, the Sorcerer's Apprentice, that is a movie that is made purely for children. It is so directed at children.
Like six-year-olds.
Versus Harry Potter, which is a movie that's really made for everyone. It is made for everyone to enjoy, whether you're a child or an adult, whether you're there with, you know, your family, or you're just there as a bunch of adults seeing it.
Yeah, I still remember to this day, you know, we were at a parking garage, and there was this, you know, this large black man, you know, tough-looking guy, like, sitting there, you know, taking tickets, and, like, then, you know, going back to his Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone. You know, this is, like, one of those books that just crossed every sort of line that you expected, and everybody, you know, everyone who just liked a good story, really. Mm-hmm. Enjoyed these books, and that's why they're so successful. And yeah, I mean, do you want to talk about the new movie, or should we get on to the new movie? Or?
Well, we only have a couple more minutes left in this half hour.
But yeah, I think you know, it's hard to state, you know, kind of how important I think this franchise is for mm-hmm. a lot of reasons. It's a testament to sort of sticking your guns. You know, like Daniel Radcliffe, you know, he was quoted, I think, after he had made the first movie, that he figured he would be in the next two movies, but then he would be recast after that.
Yeah.
You know, and there was, like, you know, you said earlier in the show, Rybar, you know, everyone's kind of like, you know, oh, you know, Hermione, you know, is going to end up like Lindsay Lohan, or, you know, everyone's expecting
everybody thought,
train wreck.
I mean,
you know?
Emma Watson was also planning on leaving the series at some point, too. And, you know, I kind of find it amusing that she, like, she didn't think she wanted to be an actress, and so she went off to school, and then she realized how much she loved acting. And
then
she's
they
like,
offered
yeah,
more money.
That's true, too.
Well,
that's
where it's done.
But, you know, it's also that, it's also kind of that, what is that syndrome where, you know, all they know is acting at this point, you know what I mean? It's like they've sort of gotten to that point where, you know, this is the thing. This is one of the reasons why I love these kids, why I love, you know, especially the three main kids who starred in these movies is, you know, I know that they're really rich and, you know, you can look at it like, oh, you know, they don't have to worry anymore about money and stuff. But for me, it's like, I think we should all thank them because they gave us their childhood.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they can't get that time back. Like, from the age of, like, 10 to 11 to, like, 21, 22, they were steadily working, like, almost all the time, and that's gone. That period of time where the rest of us were like messing around and partying and making mistakes and doing whatever the hell we wanted,
mm-hmm.
they were working to entertain the rest of the world.
I love seeing Daniel Radcliffe in interviews because he's just like, he's just such a, you know, so happy for what he has, so happy to have been Harry Potter. And one of the greatest things that you can see if you look on YouTube is there are some interviews that, like, there were a few little Japanese girls that got the opportunity, they won a contest and were able to interview Daniel Radcliffe, and it is one of the, like, it's one of those things of how, you know, cross country Harry Potter is, how, you know, it crosses all sorts of boundaries, like
cross-cultural.
You were saying, cross-cultural, yeah. And And the little girls, the way that they interact with him and just like the love that they have for the character Harry Potter is just, it's the greatest thing to see.
Well, because we all expect brats in America. You know, we all expect, you know, like the kids from Twilight or Too Cool for School, or, you know, we always expect these people that we really expect people that are ungrateful for what they have. That has become the norm.
Yeah.
And so to see these kids that, you know, that are really, you know, they're thankful, they're cool, they're cordial, it's kind of weird because in America we expect the jerk.
Yeah.
And we love the jerk.
I think part of the great thing is all these great actors that they got to work with, they seem to have learned a lot of humility just by being, you know, on set all the time with these incredible, incredible British actors.
I totally agree. You know, I totally agree. I mean, that's one of the things we always talk about. There's so many English actors because it's very difficult to get any kind of acting work in England. And you know, they're great actors too. I mean, you know, Gary Oldman was a big part of it, and obviously, just I mean, you could go down the line of all the amazing British actors that were in this movie.
Mm-hmm. More than not.
But we should actually move on to another break, and when we come back, we got a whole lot more Harry Potter stuff to talk about. So stay tuned. Don't forget, if you want to get in touch with us, send an email to geekworld@925.com. And check out our website at geekworldradio.com.